All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is an overcast and kind of damp feeling, 33 degrees here in upstate New York. And we are not going to be getting this next big storm that's coming up the coast. They said like 2 to 4 inches, which is way better than the foot and a half they are predicting for the East Coast. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show AI, Puny Humans, EEG Mood Emojis, Pre-Crime, Nanomeds, and CRISPR. And we had looked at a lot of things over the last couple days. The rebroads I ran were about nanotechnology and some of the things that I had found in there was a YouTube video out of Australia talking about nanotech and food. And we also listened to Robert Freitas yesterday talking about nanotechnology and medicine. Of course, we've talked about nanobots in your blood to cure everything that ails you in the past. But one of the things that caught my attention was one of the last stories we read on Friday that was titled A Single Administration of CRISPR-Cas9 Lipid Nanoparticles Achieves Robust and Persistent In Vivo, and that is in the body, genome editing. Now, that is the first time I had heard of CRISPR being combined with nanoparticles and doing some sort of genome editing. So it was concerning to me. So I kind of dug a little more into exactly what lipid nanoparticles are and how they interact in the body and where our nanotechnology in food program has gone since some of the earliest days when, of course, you guessed it, good old George Bush signed our Nanotechnology Act, Research and Development Act, into fruition. I found a link to the WhiteHouse.gov document. President Bush signs Nanotechnology Research and Development Act. Today at the White House, and this was dated December 3rd, 2003, the president signed into law the 21st Century Nanotechnology Research and Development Act, which authorizes funding for nanotechnology research and development over 4 years, starting in fiscal year 2005. This legislation puts into law programs and activities supported by the National Nanotechnology Initiative. Did you know we had one of those? Because I know I didn't. One of the president's highest multi-agency R&D priorities. Now, if you remember, Bush was also the one that allowed the FDA to rubber stamp cloning and say, hey, we're going to look the other way if you want to use clone beef or clone pigs or whatever else you want and put them on the market. We're not going to question you, you know, because it's expensive and most people aren't going to do it yet. But when you decide you want to, it'll be A-okay. And by the way, you don't have to label it. Shh. Sounds like there was some investment there. Anyway, let's continue. Nanotechnology offers the promise of breakthroughs that will revolutionize the way we detect and treat disease, ding, ding, monitor and protect the environment, produce and store energy, and build complex structures as small as an electronic circuit and as large as an airplane. Nanotechnology is expected to have a broad and fundamental impact on many sectors of the economy, so it's all about money, people. I saw a report yesterday that they were predicting trillions of dollars in profit by 2020, so let's turn up the gas, leading to new products, new businesses, new jobs, and even new industries. Nanotechnology is the ability to work at the atomic and molecular levels. So this explains a lot of this mad science gone mad that is happening right now. Corresponding to lengths, approximately 1 to 100 nanometers, and that would be 1/100,000th the diameter of a human hair. Nanotechnology is not merely the study of small things. It is the research and development of materials, devices, and systems that exhibit physical, chemical, and biological properties that are different from those found at larger scales. And that's one of the biggest concerns that I've seen even some mainstream-ish scientists have about nanotech, is that when some of these substances that they are utilizing go from regular size to nano size, the materials don't react the same way when they are nanoized as they did when they were macroized. And they're worried about once these get into the human body, how they're going to interact and maybe some toxicity issues. And that's where my concern is, because it's going into a lot of things right now that we are potentially consuming, except no one has to label it because nothing is going to say this includes nanotechnology. Nanotech is one of the administration's top multi-agency research and development priorities. In fiscal year 2004, the president requested $849 million for nanotechnology R&D across 10 federal agencies. Nanotech research has been a priority for the administration for the last 3 years, all in the name of keeping you safe. And overall funding for nanotechnology research has increased 83% since 2001. Nanotech promises to be both evolutionary, of course, especially when they can in vivo gene edit you, and revolutionary, improving and creating entirely new products and processes in the areas from electronics to, you guessed it, healthcare. Carbon nanotubes are essentially sheets of graphite rolled into extremely narrow tubes, a few nanometers in diameter, and because of their nanoscale and their excellent conductivity, carbon nanotubes are being studied as a possible building block for future electronic devices, and they are already working on that. Nanotechnology may one day enable the detection of disease on a cellular level and targeting of treatments only to tissues where it is needed in the patient's body, potentially alleviating many unpleasant and sometimes harmful side effects. Except don't worry about the toxicity. They are already working on this as well with some of these lipid encapsulated nanoparticles and little nanobots where they can target cancerous tumors and deliver a hidden payload that your immune system isn't going to recognize. Nanomanufacturing of parts and materials from the bottom up by assembling them on an atom-by-atom basis may one day be used to reduce waste and pollution in the manufacturing process, so it's all going to be green as well. And nanosensors, stuff that DARPA's working on, are already being developed to allow fast, reliable, real-time monitoring for everything from chemical attacks to environmental leaks. They can help provide clean energy. For example, carbon nanotubes are a form of nanomaterial with many potential applications. Woven into a cable, carbon nanotubes can provide electricity transmission with substantially improved performance over current power lines. And certain nanomaterials show promise for use in making more efficient solar cells and the next generation catalyst membranes that will be used for hydrogen-powered fuel cells. Now, I don't really have an issue with them using it to make better transmission, and carbon nanotubes actually have some really good conductivity processes, and I believe they were also using them at one point for cleaning water, which who knows if there's, I mean, this is what's so scary about this, is that this technology is so new, and I haven't seen anything that is long-term study-ish with any of this stuff. So if they're using it to clean water, well, is that leaving any residual in the water that then the animals or the people are drinking? Well, who knows? And what are the long-term effects going to be? We'll wait 20 years and maybe we'll tell you. So then I looked up some of the Food and Drug Administration policies on nanotechnology. This comes out of FDA.gov. Considering whether an FDA-regulated product involves the application of nanotechnology. Now, remember, a lot of these corporations are doing research in their own laboratories, so this isn't some federal program that is looking at safety. This is the corporation that's creating their own patented products and then applying for a rubber stamp to get them in the market. So, I don't know, we're not going to go through blah, 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 all this FDA stuff, but there are some important things in here. For the purpose of this guidance only, references to quote-unquote products that involve the application of nanotechnology or nanotechnology products mean products that contain or are manufactured using materials on the nanoscale range, as well as products that are manufactured using certain materials – that otherwise exhibit related dimension-dependent properties or phenomenon. Likewise, you use the term nanomaterials generally to refer to both materials on the nanoscale and certain materials that otherwise exhibit related dimension-dependent properties or phenomenon. And the use of these terms is for the purpose of communicating the FDA's current thinking on elaborating in this document only. And this was back from 2014. As used in this guidance, so this isn't even a rule, this is just quote-unquote guidance, the word products is meant to include products, materials, ingredients, or other substances regulated by the FDA, including drugs, biological products, medical devices, food substances, including food for animals, dietary supplements, and that's where you're going to find that titanium dioxide, cosmetic products there as well, and tobacco products. Are they putting nano in tobacco? This current thinking on determining whether FDA-regulated products involve the application of nanotechnology is a guidance intended for manufacturers, suppliers, importers, and other stakeholders. And the FDA's guidance documents, including this guidance, does not establish, and this is the important part, legally enforceable responsibilities. So don't worry about it, because we're going to give you some guidance, but we aren't going to enforce it, just like the cloning stuff. Instead, guidance documents describe the FDA's current thinking on a topic and should be viewed only as recommendations unless specific regulatory or statutory requirements are cited. And I haven't seen any of those. The use of the word should in agency guidance documents mean that something is suggested or recommended, but not required. The application of nanotechnology may result in product attributes that differ from those of conventionally manufactured products and thus may merit particular examination. That's what I was saying. The nanoscale products react differently than the macro scale products. However, FDA does not categorically judge all products that involve the application of nanotechnology as intrinsically benign or harmful, and the FDA will regulate nanotechnology products under existing statutory authorities in accordance with specific legal standards applicable to each type of product under its jurisdiction. And we've seen how well they have done in other fields. We consider the current framework for safety assessment sufficiently robust and flexible to be appropriate for a variety of materials, including nanomaterials, i.e. the American public is the group of guinea pigs, and the FDA maintains a product-focused, science-based regulatory policy, and of course, nobody that is helping regulate that policy is in the pocket of the corporations. Technical assessments will be product-specific, taking into account the effects of nanomaterials in a particular biological and mechanical context of each product and its intended use. And as such, the particular policies for each of the product areas, both substantive and procedural, will vary according to the statutory authorities. There's lots of gobbledygook. So where does that leave us? Well, points to consider. At this time, 2014, when considering whether an FDA-regulated product involves this application of nanotechnology, the FDA will ask, one, whether the material or the end product is engineered to have at least one external dimension or an internal or surface structure in the nanoscale range. And in addition, as we explain in more detail below, because materials or end products can also exhibit related properties or phenomenon attributed to a dimension outside of the nanoscale range, particularly 1 nanometer to 100 nanometers that are relevant to the evaluations of safety, effectiveness, performance, quality, public health, or regulatory status, we will also ask, too, whether a material or end product is engineered to exhibit properties or phenomenon, including physical or chemical properties or biological effects that are attributable to its dimensions or even these dimensions if they fall outside the nanoscale range. All right, we're going to scroll down. Conclusion. The two points to consider elaborated in this guidance should be applied when considering whether an FDA-regulated product involves an application of nanotech. An affirmative finding to either of the points to consider elaborated in this guidance might also suggest the need for particular attention to the product by the FDA and or industry for potential implications for safety, effectiveness, public health impact, and regulatory status of the product. We will consider future revisions of our approach, including developing regulatory definitions relevant to nanotechnology as warranted and in keeping with evolving scientific understanding. So apparently in the last 4 years, there hasn't been any evolving scientific understanding of nanotechnology. I find that pretty hard to believe. There remains a need to learn more about the potential role and importance of dimensions in the physical and chemical characteristics and the biological effects exhibited by FDA-regulated products that involve the application of nanotechnology in product-specific pre-market reviews. When required, offer an opportunity for the FDA to better understand the properties and behavior of products that involve the applications of nanotechnology. That makes you feel safe. So where the products that involve the application of nanotech are not subject to pre-market review, so those would be the ones that they let go without looking at, we urge the industry, to consult the agency early in the product development process. So we're going to let the wolves manage the hen house. And in this way, any questions about the product's regulatory status, safety, effectiveness, and public health impact can be appropriately and adequately addressed. The FDA has, and as needed, will continue to provide additional guidance to the industry in a more targeted guidance document to address these considerations. That's got to be frightening to everyone. So then I found another federal website. This one is nano.gov. We know we had one of those titled Funding Programs, Fostering Commercialization of Nanotechnologies. In addition to grants, the federal government offers special programs designed to seed commercialization activities that facilitate economic growth, and these programs support small businesses, universities, and other research institutions. These are organized below under the following headings, and that would be collaborations, multi-agency funding opportunities, as well as agency-specific programs. And note that the programs and other activities listed below are only examples, and this is not a comprehensive list of all the federal government activities. So there's other ones that you don't quite know about. Wink. Additional information and federal funding opportunities are available at grants.gov. And examples of current nanotechnology-related solicitations are also posted at nano.gov/grants. All right, so under collaborations, the first one is the Federal Lab Consortium. The Federal Laboratory Consortium for Technology Transfer is the formally chartered nationwide network of over 300 federal laboratories, agencies, and research centers that fosters commercialization best practice strategies and opportunities for accelerating federal technologies from out of the labs and into the marketplace. And I think this is some of the same stuff that DARPA uses when they fund universities to develop something for them, and then they spin them out into an IPO. The FLC, and that's the Federal Laboratory Consortium, is described as a one-stop shop of U.S. laboratory information, available technologies, funding, program, facilities, and more. All right, so the next one listed under collaborations, we've heard about these guys before, and that would be InQtel. Now, if I'm not mistaken, InQtel has history with departments such as the NSA, maybe even the CIA, with some of the back-end spying that has been going on over the last, 10 or 15 years. InQtel is, of course, a nonprofit, wink, strategic investor that accelerates the development and the delivery of cutting-edge technologies to U.S. government agencies that, of course, keep our nation safe. Supporting work bridges the gap between the challenging technology needs of the national security agencies and the rapidly changing innovations of the startup world and the venture community that funds these startups. So how great is that? We have InQtel that is helping move this along. Also, third, is an organization called Manufacturing USA. Manufacturing USA brings together industry, academia, government partners within a growing network of advanced manufacturing institutes to increase manufacturing competitiveness. And each institute is a public-private partnership that focuses on promoting robust and sustainable manufacturing research and developing a specific promised advance in manufacturing technology. The program advances American manufacturing innovation by creating the infrastructure to allow the U.S. industry and academia to work together. So what is that going to be? Manufacturing nanobots? to put everyone out of jobs? To work together to solve industry-relevant manufacturing problems in research and development, technology transition, workforce training, and education. This institute catalyzes cooperation between U.S. companies and researchers from universities and federal labs to rapidly develop ideas and inventions into products and processes that can be used by U.S. manufacturers. And by involving small and large U.S.-based companies, we have brought everyone into the fold. This Manufacturing USA Institute stimulates the formation of manufacturing ecosystems, building advanced capabilities into domestic supply chain so that new technologies developed in the U.S. are manufactured here rather than in other countries. Each institute works to ensure that American workers are trained for high-paying jobs needed to manufacture these new technologies. Blah, 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 blah. And this goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Go to nano.gov and read the rest of it for yourself. Read it and weep as to how many organizations, including the National Institute of Health, NASA, National Science Foundation. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're all developing nanotechnology solutions, of course, for our national security and to make trillions of dollars. So here... Wait, where was I moved it? The story that we closed out the show with on Friday was about utilizing lipid encapsulated nanoparticles to be able to genetically modify in vivo. Well, here's a story or a study out of the National Institute of Health, engineered nanomaterials in food. Implications for food safety and consumer health. So this is how they're going to spin it to us. This was May 2014, so it doesn't look like from 2014, though I do see stuff about sustainable agriculture, but I haven't seen too much. Oh, yeah, titanium dioxide. At one point, we read a study about how they had found the titanium dioxide, which is the white pigment that they put into a lot of different things, like your vitamins and your drugs and some of your foods, including Mentos. And I think I even saw coconut, commercial coconut, to make it look white. They had found that that prevents absorption of nutrients in your intestines. So, all right, let's go here. Engineered nanomaterials in food, implications for food safety and consumer health. From the current state of the art, it is clear that nanotechnology applications are expected to bring a range of benefits from the food sector, aiming at providing better quality of food and conservation. In the meantime, a growing number of studies indicate that exposures to certain engineered nanomaterials has a potential to lead to health consequences, and that there is a need for further investigation in order to unravel the biological outcomes of nano food consumption. Really now? So why are we just hearing about this now? And why isn't nano labeled on food? Well, because you might get afraid. In the current review, we summarize the existing data on the potential use of nanomaterials in the food industry. Information on toxicity profiles of commonly applied nanomaterials, such as metal oxide particles, and address the potential food safety implications and the health hazards connected with the consumption of nano food. A number of health complications connected with the human exposure to nanomaterials are discussed, demonstrating that there is a real basis for the arising concerns, not only connected with gut health, but also with the potency to lead to systemic toxicity. the toxicological nature of hazard exposure levels and risk to consumers from nanotechnology-derived foods are on the earliest stage of investigation in 2014. And this review also highlights the major gaps that are needed for further research and regulation. Like, this is horrifying, people. It is now 2018. This is 4 years later. The shit is still in our food. And, well, yeah, there might be issues. Don't worry about it. Shh, go back to sleep. It's all for your safety. Engineered nanomaterials designed for many uses in commercial materials, devices, and structures are already found in various common products such as sunscreens, cosmetics, sporting goods, clothing, tires, electronics, etc. And nanotechnology applications also extend to techniques like drug delivery, diagnosis, biomedical imaging, groundwater remediation, and so forth. The massive industrial production and application of nanoparticles currently and predictedly increased in the near future may result in their appearance in various environments, yielding the possibility of human exposure to these nanoparticles through inhalation, dermal contact, or ingestion. The annual release of engineered nanomaterials into the environment cannot be accurately estimated. So we have no idea, just like the cloning, due to the rapidly increasing production volumes, lack of knowledge on the amount of engineered nanomaterials applied and released from different applications and products. And don't worry about it, because the federal government funded it all. So we don't need to tell you. And the FDA gave a recommendation and a wink, but nobody is really tracking this, apparently, because they have no idea how much is being released into our environment or what we are exposed to. Due to the high volume of production of consumer products and containing engineered nanomaterials, such as nanoparticles of silver, titanium dioxide, zinc oxide, silica, etc., human exposure to these man-made nanoparticles is possibly directly via personal healthcare products, cosmetics, food, drinking water, drugs, and drug delivery systems, and or indirectly through the release of these compounds into the environment. The latter may potentially result in the contamination of drinking water and the uptake into the human food chain. I also had read a while ago about them talking about putting some sort of nanoparticles into chicken feed, to so when the chickens ate the nanoparticle antibacterial chicken feed, that they were hoping that it would kill the whatever it is that's in chickens. Why you got to wash your hands after you touch eggs? I don't know what it is right now. What is it? I don't have chat, guys. Actually, as soon as I typed that, I wish I could go back in time and make sure that the Bush regime never happened. my whole browser crashed and I can't get back in. So chat can't even help me. The dietary consumption of nanoparticles in developing countries is estimated to be more than 10 to the 12th power particles per day, consisting mainly of titanium dioxide and mixed silicates. And in some countries, engineered nanomaterials are already used in food supplements and food packaging, with nanoclays as a diffusion barrier and silver nanoparticles as an antimicrobial agent. Which, that worries me, because I do take silver when I am not feeling well, and that is nanoparticulate silver. So I'm starting to get a little concerned about some of what I've been reading. Engineered nanoparticles likely found in nanofood products fall into three main categories. That would be inorganic, surface functionalized materials, and organic engineered nanoparticles. Inorganic nanomaterials, which will mainly be discussed in this review, find currently their applications in the food industry, such as food additives, food packaging, or storage, and include engineered nanomaterials of transition metals, and that would be silver, iron, titanium, and zinc. And I read somewhere along the way over the weekend that zinc nanoparticles are pretty toxic, so if you see anything like that, stay away from them. They also discuss alkaline earth metals such as calcium and magnesium, and nonmetals such as selenium and silicates. So while the successful implementation of nanotechnology is an important is important for the growth of the global economy. That's all that's important right now. There's also a need to consider the possible environmental health and safety impact of engineered nanomaterials that could lead to hazardous biological outcomes. Yes, that's what I am concerned about, the hazardous biological outcomes. Once in the environment, you can't put that genie back into the bottle. Engineered nanoparticles may undergo physical, diverse, chemical, and biological transformations. What? Which would be such as deposition, adsorption, agglomeration, aggregation, oxidation, reduction reactions, and biofunctionalization, potentially altering their biological impact and fate. So once they're released, they start to mutate. Certain local environment factors such as the pH, salinity, microbes, natural organic matter, etc., may affect the reactivity, mobility, and toxicity of the engineered nanoparticles. An area that could highly benefit from nanotechnology, of course, is the food industry, with big potentials for food safety, quality, preservation, such as shelf life. And in the food sector, the use of nanotechnology-derived food ingredients, additives, supplements, and contact materials is expected to grow rapidly. And of course, the FDA is just kind of giving you a wink. Let us know if you got anything that's different. Maybe we'll take a look at it. Nanotechnology analysts estimate between 150 to 600 nanofoods and 400 to 500 nanopackaged food applications are already on the market as of 2014. And according to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies, as of 2013, in the category food and beverage, it is indicated that there are 204 products, while according to the potential exposure pathways into the human body from a theoretical perspective, there are only 107 products with potency to be ingested. Applications of engineered nanoparticles in the agri-food industry may pose new indirect sources of food contamination, as many may arise from nano-sized pesticides and veterinary medicines. Contact of foods with nanoparticulate-based coatings used during the preparation or processing, and the potential migration of engineered nanoparticles from food packaging. I'm going to stop for a second because I was looking at a slide presentation from some event on nanotech and food, and I think somewhere in here I have that presentation up. One of the things they were discussing is these new nanopesticides that they spray on things such as apples. And I was really highly concerned about that because nobody really knows what the effect is going to be or how much of this gets into the food. Even if you peel the apple or if it gets on your hands, can it be absorbed into your body that way? There are already known examples of pesticide formulations that are based on a microemulsion or microencapsulation technology. And that's some of the stuff we were talking about on Friday, those lipid nanoparticles that are encapsulated in lipids or fats so then they can be easily eaten and digested. They're talking about using that stuff not only in medications but also in what they're calling quote-unquote nutraceuticals that would be making past unhealthy food healthy for you. So I've warned you before, anytime you see something that you know that wasn't good for you in the past, and all of a sudden it says, now with lycopene, now healthy with carotene, now with probiotics, or something like that, always raise an eyebrow. You know, your Cheetos with vitamins and minerals. You know, I wonder about cereals even, for that matter. Oh, vitamin fortified. I'd read before that a lot of those were synthetic vitamins. A literature review on Nino, they're calling them Nino pesticides, unless that was a misprint, was published recently that combines the existing information and concludes, concludes that the nano formulations expected to have significant impacts on the fate of active ingredients and or the introduction of new ingredients for which the environmental fate is still poorly understood. Considering the lack of knowledge of the environmental behavior and the fate of engineered nanoparticles, it is difficult to assess whether engineered nanoparticles may bioaccumulate in the food chain. Now, hold the phone here. This is out of the National Institute of Health from 2014, but we discovered 2003, the Bush White House gave approval and all kinds of funding starting in 2005 to accelerate the creation and development and all those different organizations working together of engineered nanomaterials to be utilized in healthcare as well as in the food chain. How insane is this? So this, the genie is so out of the bottle, and we don't know what's going to happen. So you and the environment is one big petri dish, and we are doing a real-time experiment. Numerous food-related applications of engineered nanomaterials that have the potential to be directly or indirectly, and that would be after mucociliary clearance from the respiratory tract after being inhaled and ingested, make an issue of the current concern in the study of the potential adverse health effects of engineered nanomaterials on the gastrointestinal tract. The whole cascade of events, including absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion elimination that occurs following ingestion, determines that internal exposure and toxicity of engineered nanomaterials. The picture becomes more complicated due to the interactions of nanomaterials with the surrounding matrix, and that would be your GI fluids, your foods that you eat, and your microflora in your gut, and unexpected effects resulting from this. From this point of view, the interaction of nanoparticles with food components is another aspect that may need consideration and about which little information is currently available. God, guys, this is crazy. And the potential interaction of food components may alter the physicochemical properties of the engineered nanomaterials that in turn may influence their passage through the GI tract. Engineered nanoparticles, due to their specific physicochemical properties and their high reactivity, can influence basic cellular processes such as proliferation, metabolization, and death. Individual engineered nanomaterials may lead to one or more toxicity endpoints, resulting in dysfunction of these basic processes. And in recent years, several in vitro studies have assessed the potential adverse health effects of engineered nanomaterials, pointing out their ability to induce oxidative stress, release toxic ions, disrupt electron and ion cell membrane transport activity, as well as cause oxidative damage and lipid peroxidation. While results from in vivo studies have also shown that these materials can induce adverse side effects on the respiratory, cardiovascular, and nervous systems. So let's continue our research into using these for biomedical cures. And that's what seems to be going on. The most relevant pathogenic pathway linking engineered nanomaterial exposure to tissue damage is represented by the induction of reactive oxygen species generation, and the latter may modulate intracellular calcium concentrations, activate transcription factors, and induce cytokine production, which I think would be also that then would lead to inflammation. And other toxicity endpoints involve cytotoxicity, genotoxicities, that'd be toxicity to the cells, toxicity to the genes, and stimulation of an inflammatory or an immune response. I wonder if any autoimmune disease could be linked to the exposure of nanoparticulates in our environment and in our food would be a good question. And in this review, we will provide, and this is a very long study, so I'll link to all this stuff in the notes if you want to read this whole thing. In this review, we will provide information on the probable sources of food contamination with engineered nanoparticles, available toxicity profiles for them commonly implied in the food industry, and the existing data on the possible health complications and ingested nanoparticles and the data gaps existing in this area. Applications for engineered nanomaterials in the food sector. Food itself contains many nanostructured materials, and this is important to note the distinction between natural nanostructures and deliberately engineered nanomaterials produced to a particular specification, and that is not always clear. Food and feed ingredients compromise many components, including biopolymers such as proteins, complex carbohydrates, and fats, and that would probably be with the lipid encapsulated nanoparticles, with sizes extending down to the nanoscale. Natural nanostructures are not regulated as products of nanotechnology, and they need to be differentiated deliberately from the engineered nanoparticles when considering regulatory requirements and definitions. So if you were a company making this stuff, just make it look like it's organic and naturally occurring, and no one will even look twice at it. There are already identified potential uses of nanotechnology in virtually every segment of the food industry, with the four key focus areas below. 1, agricultural pesticide, fertilizer or vaccine delivery, animal and plant pathogen detection, and targeted genetic engineering. And we already read about some of that. 2, food processing, encapsulation of flavor and odor enhancers, yes, and food textural and quality improvements, new gelatin or viscosifying agents. And I had already read about nanotech being used in things such as gravies and salad dressings to make them more smooth. They use them for smoothening agents. But also I was reading about them using them for preservatives as well. 3, food packaging pathogen, gas and abuse centers, anti-counterfeiting devices, UV protection, and stronger, more impermeable polymer films. And that would be in plastics like they wrap your meat in. And 4, nutrient supplement nutraceuticals, ding ding, with higher stability and bioavailability because they get them through the GI tract and down into your intestines so they can pass the blood-brain or the body-blood barrier. You wouldn't have your blood-brain barrier in your gut, but you do in your head. But all they got to do is turn on some ultrasound on your portable device, boo, and that opens that barrier and lets the nanoparticles right into your bloodstream. The potential for food nanotechnology applications seems unlimited, and there's no stopping it. And all the facets of the food industry, from ingredients to packaging and food analysis, are already looking into nanotech applications. And these are resulting in numerous promising applications for improved food production, processing, packaging, and storage, as well as targeted nutrient delivery systems, and that would be like your healthy Cheetos, bacteria identification and food quality monitoring using biosensors, intelligent, active, and smart food packaging systems, nano encapsulation of bioactive food compounds are then a few examples of emerging applications of nanotech in food. Perhaps the most advanced investigations into the use of engineered nanomaterials in food are in food contact materials for the benefit of maintaining the quality and the safety of foods. So that would be a plastic they wrap your food in, and they could tell whether or not the food is expired for its shelf date or whether or not the package has gotten dirty and maybe the food has gotten contaminated. Another major focus of current nanotechnology applications in food is the processing and the formulation of food ingredients to form nanostructures that are claimed to offer improved taste, texture, and consistency, enhanced bioavailability, and allowing the mixing of quote-unquote incompatible ingredients in the food matrix. Different types of functional nanostructures can be used as the building blocks to create novel structures and introduce new functionalities into foods, such as nanoliposomes, nanoemulsions, nanoparticles, and nanofibers. And I've seen some disturbing stuff about nanofibers in food. An example of soluble nanomaterials under development is a nanosalt, enabling consumers to lower their salt intake. Since only a small amount will cover a larger area of food surface, and nanotechnology would even be used to manufacture smart packaging to dramatically extend the shelf life of food and enable it to be transported even further. Smart packaging containing nano sensors and antimicrobial activators is being developed that will be capable of detecting food spoilage and releasing nano antimicrobials into your food to extend the food shelf life, enabling supermarkets to keep food for even greater periods before it's sold. Oh my God. Nano sensors embedded into food products as tiny chips invisible to the human eye would also act as electronic barcodes. Whoa, we should be so excited. So I don't know. Oh, well, maybe let's read this very next piece and then we're going to continue on to the organic foodie website. Number three, and this is still out of the National Institute of Health's documentation, so I got to give them the kudos for at least telling some truth, even though they are part of this big nasty machine that is fostering this nano rollout into our food supply. Number three, fate of engineered nanoparticles following ingestion. Well, let's check this out. So whether it exists as a nano-structured food ingredient, a nano-carrier, and that would be some sort of little cage made at a nano level, like a little buckyball that can encapsulate drugs or nutraceutical ingredients into your food and through your digestion, or nano-sized particles also incorporated in food packaging, human exposure to engineered nanomaterials presented in food or food contact materials occurs through ingestion, owing to the huge surface area of the gastrointestinal tract. Ingestion is probably the most common way of intentional exposure to various nanoparticles. There currently is not much information, of course there isn't, regarding metabolism and biotransformation of engineered nanoparticles upon oral administration in the human model. So again, we are just guinea pigs. And in this relation, we'll find out in 20 years, though. Don't worry about it. In this relation, there are several concerns, such as those connected with the small size of engineered nanomaterials that may enter the food chain undetected, wink, accumulate within your tissues and your organs, and are taken up by individual cells. So remember, we found out a long time ago when we started looking at nanotech that once they got into the body, they tend to accumulate in places such as your spleen, your liver, your kidneys. And those are places that you don't want them to be, and they don't get flushed out like they originally thought. There's also a concern that the introduction into food of engineered nanomaterial designed to carry dietary supplements could also lead to the introduction of foreign substances into the bloodstream. And one of the different complications as a result of nano food ingestion is the possibility of altered absorption profiles and altered metabolism in the body. The altered metabolism could occur as a result of several processes. Number one is engineered nanomaterials have been shown to have a greater ability to cross the gut wall. So I guess that's what we call it. There's the blood-brain barrier and then the gut wall into your bloodstream. As compared to microparticles of the same kind, their enhanced absorption and bioavailability would result in higher internal exposure and higher plasma concentrations. The nano foods may also alter the way by which food ingredients are distributed and behave in the gastrointestinal tract. Number two, it is not only the bulk material of engineered nanomaterials that may trigger biological effects. Engineered nanomaterials may form a biofunctional corona and thus act as carriers of these substances to different biological tissues, maybe even your brain, potentially influencing the absorption of molecules by inducing unintended molecules across the gastrointestinal tract and lead to unpredictable effects known as, oh yes, the Trojan horse effect. And that's what we've been saying all along. All of these technologies are Trojan horses. Of course, it's going to be to keep you safe, keep your food safe, to cure you of your cancer. But there is a Trojan horse effect. As it gets inside of you, we don't quite know what it is going to do or what the long-term effects are going to be. In addition, this is number three. It has been shown that the consumption of food containing nanoparticles has a potential to alter the body's metabolism of experimental animals. For instance, oral administration of nano-calcium-enriched milk. Do they really have that? I don't drink milk, but I do eat cheese. Has been shown to alter the calcium metabolism in rats. So, Pam, if you're out there, that one is for you. Engineered nanomaterials entering the body through ingestion are subject to digestive processes in the gastrointestinal tract, and the gastrointestinal tract and its mucosal layer should play a role of selective barrier to systemic exposure of materials, including particulate matter in which the engineered nanomaterials may remain in the gut lumen, perhaps with a potential for interaction with the gastrointestinal tract surfaces or with the inhabitants of the lumen, and that would be your microbiota, but essentially being fully eliminated from the body via feces, or so they say. But we have found that they've found them looking at autopsies that it still tends to accumulate in your organs. The behavior of engineered nanomaterials entering the body through ingestion are described and systematically presented. Oh, God, this is a lot of reading, and this just keeps going. So, guys, I'm going to continue on to the next story because I want to get to this before the end of the show. If you want to read this story, this is the National Institute of Health document titled Engineered Nanomaterials in Foods, Implications for Food Safety and Consumer Health. Dated May 28th, 2014. All right. So now this is a publication website, organicfoodie.com. This is a document from 2006, December 2006. Nano food gets closer. Willy Wonka is the father of nano food. The great chocolate factory owner, you'll remember, invented a chewing gum that was a full three-course dinner. It will end all of the kitchens and the cooking, he told the children on his tour, and produced a sample of the Willy Wonka magic chewing gum. Yeah, this is what we're talking about. This is Willy Wonka nanotechnology coming to a food near you. So one strip of this gum would deliver tomato soup, roast beef with roasted potatoes, blueberry pie, and ice cream. And in the right order, Violet Beauregard snatched it, swiftly ate it, and at the pudding stage turned a bright purple and blew up three times her size. Yeah, that was, I thought she was Veruca Salt, but I guess she was Violet Beauregard. Does that sound far-fetched? Well, the processed food giant Kraft and a group of research laboratories are busy working toward programmable food. And this was 2006, people. So how far do you think this has come? One product they are working on is a colorless, tasteless drink that you, the consumer, will design after you bought it. You'll design what color and what flavor you would like the drink to be and what nutrients it will have once you get home. You zap the product with a correctly tuned microwave transmitter. Presumably, Kraft will sell you that as well, or maybe you can use your Wi-Fi router. And this will activate the nano capsules, each about 2,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair, containing the necessary chemicals for your choice of drink. Green-hued, black currant-flavored, with a touch of caffeine and omega-3 oil, say, and they will dissolve while all the other possible ingredients will pass unused through your body in their nano encapsulation. Is this the end of cooking? Well, probably not. Catch me having friends round for a programmable nano-cola? No, not more than once. But our reaction to some of the dafter promises of this new science is not really relevant. You may not want it, but the food industry does, and every major food corporation is investing in nanotech. Governments in Europe have pumped in $1.7 billion in research into the field over the past 8 years, and nanofoods, and so has the United States, and nanofoods and nano food packaging are on their way because the food industry has spotted a chance for very huge profits. By 2010, the business, according to analysts, will be worth $20 billion annually, and I already saw by 2020 it'll be trillions. And there is already a prototype of the Willy Wonka-esque chewing gum that uses nano capsules and promises the sensation of eating real chocolate. The food industry is hooked on nanotech's promises, but it is also very nervous. At a conference in Amsterdam to discuss nanotechnology, food, and health, I found representatives, and they'll be the author of the story, of all of the big food corporations mixed with some bumptious academics, all thrilled with their latest nano applications, and some less gung-ho bioethicists. You know, I really think I need to become a bioethicist. The food people included Unilever, Kraft, Cadbury, Schweppes, Tate and Lyle, and GlaxoSmithKline, and they were all very shy and tittery and entirely off the record if they spoke at all. I was having a friendly chat with a research scientist from Numico, which is a European baby food giant, and until he found out that I was a journalist. Then he refused to tell me his name and asked me to erase the word Numico from my notebook. I thought he was going to snatch it away. It is obvious why they were edgy. Consumers are not ready for nano food, and among some scientists in the field, there is a real sense that nanotechnology, in food at least, is a revolution that may die in its cradle unless we're really quiet about it and we don't label it and the FDA looks the other way. Then nobody will know about it. But rejected by a public that has lost its footing, or has lost trust in scientists and its patience with the industry, profit-driven, fooling us with what we eat. And that is exactly the problem. At the conference, of course, the media was blamed for the bad thinking of the public about nanotech. And the only journalist there, she was, I got some eggs thrown at me. Ignorant, sensationalist journalism was holding back progress of nanotechnology and food and fueling the public's quote-unquote irrational reaction to novel food processes. But Lynn Frewer, professor of food safety and consumer behavior at Walcheren University, which is a leading center of nanotech research in the Netherlands, called the scientists to order. And the public's irrational fears that needed addressing, she said, it is human nature. An involuntary risk, however remote, concerns people far more than ones which they have a choice. Yes, because they're putting it in our food. They're not telling us, and we're all being exposed. That is why the public finds gene editing technology more threatening than eating fatty, unhealthy food. And after the, right, you know your enemy. After the debates of GMO and bovine spongiform encephalopathy, she said, the public faith is very low, and not just in food, but also in the regulated species.